Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Hello, Yat A. Welcome again. Yat A and welcome to Native Art Veteran Voices of the Four Corners. Yat A and welcome to Native Art Veteran Voices of the Four Corners. This is your host, Vinaya Yazi. Today is April and we are in the month of spring, and we have another new guest for you today. His name is Elmer Yazi, and he is a painter from the Four Corners community on the Navajo Reservation. Yat A. Elmer, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Oh, good. So would you like to introduce yourself to the public, Elmer?
Yes. My dad is Kinichitni. My mother is Nadeskeja. My clan is Deskeitni. And my name is Elmer C. Yazi Sr. from Shiprock, New Mexico.
Okay, it's great that you're another relative here with us to talk about your art and the way you do your art and why you do your art. And also, we'd like to hear a little bit, too, today about your life as a veteran, as a former person of the military, and maybe how that has played a role in your art life and your overall experience of being an artist in the community. So I guess the first thing I want to ask you, Elmer, is what role did you play in the U.S. military?
I was in the Army. United States Army. I volunteered in 1967 and I came out of the Army with honorable discharge 1970, July. And I volunteered, like I said, for 3 years and was stationed in Texas, Arizona, and Kansas. And the war was going on at the same time. And I was transferred to Germany. I was there for a year. And I volunteered to go to Vietnam, and they sent me there. So I was in Vietnam for, I didn't finish my tour, but I was stationed in, with the Maritel Division, with the Helicopter Battalion, Combat Battalion, and Maritel Division. And I landed in the hospital in Japan November 1st, and I was medevaced out of Vietnam. The funny thing about my stay in Japan, this Japanese lady keeps saying, you're number one. I didn't really accept that because in Vietnam, you tease the girls there and say, you number 10. That means, hey, stay away from me. But anyway, she keeps saying number one in Japan. And she, I guess she kind of felt I was kind of confused. And she said, don't you know that your birthday is today, November 1st? That's the reason why I call you number one.
Oh, so, I see.
And she got me a number one bed, too.
Oh.
And she asked me if you want anything. I said, yeah. Give me a steak and a Coors Light. About around 10 o'clock at night, she came in with a steak and a Coors Light.
Wow. Isn't that something?
That was a big treat for me because I kind of lost my days and time in Vietnam. It wasn't a real war. It was a political war. I was there. My first 30 days, all gung-ho about it, but then found out that it wasn't a war that we should belong to. It was a political war. But we did our job, and of course, I got hurt down there, and I'm glad to be home. And I have my grandkids, two grandkids, my wife, my kids. So So I'm having a good time right now. And but the I did a lot of drawings in Germany for married couples with their child. Their wives did a lot of drawings, and made a lot of money. In Vietnam, I had all my stuff with me, my drawing stuff with me, and did a lot of drawing in Vietnam. And when I was medevac, I guess a soldier took all my drawings of their kids, you know, their family. But that's all right, you know, that's okay. Anyway, they snuck a helmet into my box there, military box that you travel around with. And I still have my Vietnam helmet, my original. I still have that. I still have my mosquito repellent. But anyway, that's over and done with. But I'm proud I served my country. And nobody can take that away from me now. So
yeah, I'm very glad that you were able to have that experience. And thank you for serving in the military. I also had a late uncle that went to Vietnam. And, you know, he shared stories with me, too, just like you did. Elmer, when you were in Vietnam, you know, you talked about interacting with the lady at the hospital. I always wonder, because my uncle used to talk about it too, and you know, they didn't really know what Native Americans were. Did they kind of understand what ethnicity you were, or was that an issue at all?
It was the main issue was maybe three or four, but the main one was, I volunteered to be a ranger, alert ranger, who we go out into the jungle and recon the area and call in the troops, and they can land there where it's safe. And we trained there for 2 weeks. And one of the training was, we want to have a survival training tomorrow. And so we all went there and went inside this big building. They had a big a snake. Well, big jungle snakes. I looked at it and, well, we're going to eat this today. Well, I refused to eat it. I refused my sergeant. I refused my lieutenant, captain. When I went up to, they said I'll be court-martialed for disobeying a direct order. And I kept my stand, my belief. I went up to the highest point in the battalion, and he asked me, are you Native American? I said, yes, I'm Navajo, Diné. Where are you from? I said, from Shiprock, New Mexico, Four Corners. Boy, he jumped out of his seat and, hey, I'm from Albuquerque.
Oh, wow.
So he understood the cultural belief that we have, and he released me. He said, I'm not going to press any charges against you. You know, you can die out in the jungle without training.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, I refused that direct order and got out of it. I was Native American.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good that you stood your ground.
And the other one was, I had my pollen with me. I pray every morning before sunup, and the guys came along and said, hey, we noticed your prayer. I said, what are you doing out there? I said, well, it's personal. It's not your business, you know. But they keep bugging me, you know. So I finally said, well, I'm Native American. I'm a Navajo. I had my blessings already coming down here. And I pray each morning. I pray for protection, asking the spirits to be with me. It's just not just prayer. It's asking Mother Earth to protect you, like fog, rain, rocks, trees, brushes, those are all included to protect you. And that's what I have, is praying for all these elements that will protect me during the war. And they were surprised. Really? And I said, yeah. So they called me chief after that.
Oh, isn't that something? Yeah, I think pretty much every Native in their life has been called chief, you know. Yeah. And I think sometimes people don't understand how to interact with us, you know, and because I know sometimes when there's Native people out in the world, they just say Native American and they don't know the specific tribe. So it was nice, you know, that you said Navajo and people knew who that was. So because we are a very distinct group, you know, within the Four Corners, and we're the largest Navajo Native tribe in America. And I know a lot of the Navajo went over to Vietnam to be soldiers and be in the war. So, yeah, that's really a really good memory for you, Elmer. And, well, yeah, go ahead.
I like to mention one thing about Vietnam. Those who are soldiers right now are those who are going to the military. I was going to tell you one thing about being away from home, Germany, Vietnam, wherever, Korea. And I miss home when I was in Vietnam. I just go outside and think of my wife, my family, my mom and dad, my brothers, sisters. Anyway, I was sitting outside and kind of feeling down. Sky, the night was clear, a little cool. And I looked in the heavens and I saw home. I saw the Milky Way. I looked up there and I said, oh man, I'm home. You followed me. I was jumping like crazy. You're here with me. You're home. I'm home. You're right there. You're on top of me. I was never lonely after that. The stars are there for you. The Milky Way is there for you. They will follow you everywhere you go in the world. So always remember that, soldiers. You go in there, go see, look at the Milky Way. You're home already. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great advice. You know, it is true. You know, wherever we go, if we look to the sky, it's a familiar sight. And especially with Navajos and Native Americans, we all have our beliefs in the star life, you know, like you said, the constellations. And that's really nice that you were able to find a piece of home and have that to kind of cure your homesickness, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So while you mentioned that you did do some artwork, drawing, sketching in Vietnam, what were some of the things that you sketched? You mentioned people. Did you sketch the landscape, or what was some of the favorite things that you created?
I done a lot of portraits of everybody got in line, you know, and I'd be joining it all night and being out in the field. I just had enough time for that, you know, and I come back. I did have some drawings of on the field and all that, but they kept all that when I was medevac, and they didn't send any of my drawings back or any of my paintings. They kept it. And I guess my buddies did, you know, I want to have this one, you know, but I'm glad they did. I'm glad it's taken care of, you know, so. But I did a lot of drawings in Vietnam, and don't want to talk too much detail about outside area.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm assuming that, Elmer, you're self-taught and you just had that talent with you growing up, because, you know, it seems like it just traveled with you. What is your family history of art or drawing, or did your parents or family, like, you know, support you in doing your artwork?
My dad was a silversmith way, way back, and he had all these railroad engravings from the railroad spikes and stuff. And he had a whole box full of silverware. He done good work. And I didn't really pay attention to it because he had done that in his younger days. When we grew up, he never did silversmith. But I did, in high school, I did a lot of drawing and stuff like that. I went to Catholic school in Waterflow, the Erskine teachers. Her name was Sister Alice. And she saw some, I'd done a drawing, and she said, I'm going to send this to Window Rock. I remember it was a deer with big bushes behind it with the back scenery of the mountains and stuff, desert. And I came back one first place. That kind of kicked me to become more interested in the arts. And I started drawing all the students in class in the cartoon type, you know, and the cartoon characters. And one of the teachers saw it. Hey, what's this? Oh, it's my classmate in cartoon type. And she was very excited about it. She kept it. I don't know where it went to. But anyway, our school closed in 1963, and I heard about the Art Institute. So I sent my letter and some paintings I had already. I had a Yabiche that I made, a painting, and some other one I don't quite remember. And that was accepted. And I stayed there in 1964, 1967, and I really progressed on that. And I knew Alan Hauser, he was my teacher, Fitzgerald, R.C. Gorman, a good friend, Kevin Redhouse, T.C. Cannon, Doug Hyde, Robert Shorty, Richard Yazzie, Barbara Goodluck, Shiprock. So I got to know a lot of the artists right now. I'm communicating with six of them right now. I kind of found them. Went to Taos and looked for Robert Shorty. I've been looking for years. I forgot to mention him. We served in Vietnam together. And I finally found him in Taos. So he is my first cousin. But wow. Anyway, the other one too, when I was in Germany, I'd done a painting of dull knife and submitted to Washington, D.C. And I took the grand prize on that painting. And I also took the Interior Design Magazine Award for sculpture for a deer dancer. And my work went to one-man show in Japan. I was a young student. But I love the arts and did a lot of paintings. After I retired my work from the bank and school, get my studio going, ready to go to work again.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. Amazing, Elmer. I can't believe you knew all those wonderful artists back in the day of the Santa Fe Art School. So you said Alan Hauser was your teacher.
Yeah, he's my teacher. I always remember him. And they had a a model down in Santa Fe, down the Plaza Art Museum there. A few of us were chosen to go there. They recognized us that they were very interested in the arts, like T.C. Cannon, Barb Goodluck, myself, Doug Hyde, and so on. It was about eight of us who went to it was a new class, L80. And Alan explained to us, this is pure art, you know. And at the last minute, the last words, he said, well, when she closes, drops her clothes, you're gonna have a little tingle, he said. but then, of course, Navajo Indians, we don't see that. But and when we went down there, everything exactly what he said happened, you know. But we automatically went back to the arts, pure art. And that was what we've done. This is pure work and pure art.
Yeah.
And I told Alan, I said, hey, Alan, let's get another lady here. So why? Let's have some lady a little bigger, a little fatter. Why? We need to get some movement. We need some action. And they got one, you know. So that was my way of thinking of art, is that the body's very beautiful. You got to have more curve, movement, and all that. That's why I look at art, you know. And that really helped me a lot, you know. Creating new ideas, you know, and that helped me out a lot with my works, my paintings, and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, because you need variety in art, right? You need that visual inspiration. So that's really nice that Alan mentored you all in that way. And now you also mentioned, Elmer, people like T.C. Cannon, Doug Hyde, Robert Shorty, Mark Goodluck. And you mentioned that Robert Shorty was with you in Vietnam. Did you guys know each other then? And were you able to talk about those experiences when you were students? Or that was after?
It was after.
Okay.
I was in Germany and I volunteered in Vietnam and I got to my main duty station in Maritime Division and I got a letter and it said Robert Shorty was sent to Germany and it was, they sent it back to Vietnam. They finally called me up So I read his letter, you know, and it was like 2 or 3 months old. So I went to the United States Post Office and asked him, where is this located? It's down the road, Duck Fall. It's about 20 miles from here. Really? So I want to see my cousin, Robert Shorty. So I got a pass. And I was so excited. I didn't follow the rules or nothing. I just walked out of the compound, hitchhiked down there. And when I got down there, I found it was a big hill, top of the hill, artillery. I didn't know there were artillery up there, and they fired off. Boy, I hit the ground. I thought they were bombing us already, you know, but it was artillery. Anyway, I looked for my cousin, Robert Shorty. A lot of companies up that hill. I kept walking and walking and walking. And here I saw a painting on their company. And I knew that was Robert Shorty's style. I knew it was him. So I went there and said, yeah, he's out in the field right now. And, okay, I left a note there, my address, all that good stuff. And walking down the hill, a big truck stopped there. And a bunch of Marines were in there. Where are you going? I'm going to Maricopa Division. True lie. Get in here. So I jumped in there. And they asked me, how come you didn't have your rifle with you? You're supposed to have your rifle and a couple of grenades when you leave the base. I said, I don't know nothing about that. I just want to go see my cousin. They had a checkpoint coming up. And the Marines hit me right in the middle of the truck. And I sat down in the middle, and they checked everybody else, and I made it through. Anyway, a couple of days later, he came by. We had a big firefight that night, and I was really tired. I still had my uniform on. I had my rifle with me, and somebody kicked me. Boom. Wake up, soldier. I looked out. Hey, Robert Shorty. That's where we met again. And he was R&R at Maricopa Division for 3 days. I stayed with him. Anyway, he left. I was medevac. I never saw him again. Another 10 years later, his father passed away and had the funeral at Shiprock. So I met the whole family again, you know. So.
Yeah.
He's doing his work, you know. He's doing his work right now, and sculpture and all that. And I told him I'll go up see him, power up. I thought I'd bring some money and some cheese for him.
Oh, nice, nice. That's what cousins need to do, right?
Yeah.
Especially because he's in Taos and they probably don't have mutton.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow, Elmer, such a small world in Native American country, you know? I'm also alumni from IAIA from the 1990s. And actually, just to let you know real quick, I knew Robert Shorty's father, Dooley.
Dooley Shorty, yeah.
Yeah, because I went to school with one of his sons. But yeah, I was able to meet Dooley and Robert. And so that's really such a small world. But, you know,
that's great.
Isn't that something? So, because IAIA is such a magnet for, you know, these brilliant minds of artists. And once you know a Native American artist, I believe that you're going to meet with them again somewhere down the road or collaborate or something, because it's almost like we belong to this club. And once you're in that club, you're family. So I think that's really great that you were able to have those connections, because you're in that whole era, that section, Elmer, of those master artists, those master free thinkers. And you were really you guys were really the first ones to really understand what modern art was in Native American community,
right?
You know, because before that, you know, we just had the sand painters, of course, the silversmiths,
yeah,
and all that. But can you tell the audience a little bit about how you decided to do the kind of artwork you do now, and give us a look into your subject matter and your content?
Well, I do a lot of contemporary work, and when I go to a major art show at art in Santa Fe, I will go do contemporary work. And if I go to Phoenix, I'll do another style. I go to Albuquerque, they like sceneries and stuff like that, and maybe animals. And I just follow the surrounding area Shiprocks, well, they like Davy Chase, you know, stuff like that. You know, but I like to go back to Santa Fe, the Indian market there, and go back to my tempo. I still do contemporary work. Like Shiprock, I do Shiprock in a totally different style. It's not exactly like Shiprock, but it has some contemporary drawings, colors, you know, a lot of colors. And but I'm basically a real abstract painter, you know. I'm not too abstract where they can understand it, you know. But Santa Fe has taught me a lot about different types of paintings, abstract, Indian art, you know, two-dimensional, three-dimensional. I think one of the things that that influenced me too was during the hippie era in Santa Fe, and that told me a lot, because a lot of them didn't know who they were. We couldn't understand them, you know. Hey, we're Navy. We know we're Native American. We know who we are. But these white people, they don't know where they're supposed to be. But eventually, a lot of them became doctors and lawyers, you know. And I knew a few of them. And but I think a lot of the hippie art has influenced me a lot, you know, being a more creative thinker and different styles, you know. And But it was great. Love Santa Fe. I want to make Santa Fe my home.
Yeah, you might go and retire there.
Oh, no, I'll do it here.
Yeah, it's just good to visit, huh?
Yeah. But I know Eugene Joe here, too. We grew up together, Eugene Joe, James Joe, and the local artists around Shipra. I know them very well, you know. And they want me to get involved with a lot of things, you know, but I used to have my own art show at Mesa Verde National Park, the Native Mesa Verde National Arts and Sales Show. And I had that for about 17 years, and I had Native Americans from all over the United States come at that show up there in July, and great show. And I did a lot of promotion, and not only Mesa Verde, but Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Gallup, Farms, you know, it shows for Native Americans to for their families and stuff. And when I talked to Bob Hyder at the time, superintendent, very interested. And I laid all the big shows off Albuquerque and Santa Fe. I put all my efforts to Mesa Verde National Park art show up there for 17 years. And my kids all grew up with me. They grew up taking care of my books and all that. So I was kind of the boss, you might say, do this and do that, you know. So they're all growing up, and now they're on their own. Now I'm retired from a lot of things, you know. So I forgot one more thing. In Vietnam, I had a call, people looking for me on the reservation. The veterans were looking for me. Yes. Somebody told me that somebody's looking for you. Go to the VA hospital. I mean, the veteran hospital in Shiprock. So I went there and I told my Elmer Yazzie. Oh, she got excited. Elmer Yazzie. We're looking for you. We thought you'd be gone or died or something like that. Come in the office. I ran the office. Sit down. Have a seat. I'm getting a computer. She got a computer. Boop, 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 boop. Got the screen up. Come here, Elmer. And I went back there and I thought, oh my God. They found my Zippo cigarette lighter, Vietnam. 53 years after I left Vietnam, it came back to me.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah. And the father found the Mancos Canyon up there. Honey or something. He just found it and threw it in the drawer and said, I've been there. Now, he couldn't remember who, he lost his memory, you know, and her name was Sally. And she said, I recognize your name. I knew it was Navajos. Never thought about it. So one day it kind of bothered me. I got a cigarette lighter and I called the Navajo Nation veterans asking for you. And But I got a bag. It says Elmer C. Ozzy, South Vietnam, Republic of Vietnam, 1969, something like that. And I have it now. And she made a beautiful pouch for me, Sally. And it's like a medicine bag, but very beautiful. And I have my cigarette lighter there. So I retired my cigarette lighter. We're both retired now.
Yeah. Wow. What a treasure to have that, you know, and it's kind of popped you back to, you know, the time when you were there as a young man. Yeah, it's an awesome story, Elmer. Thank you for sharing that with us. What I was wanting to ask you next was, you know, you talked about your work being very contemporary and sort of abstract. You know, now as a retired person and, you know, kind of, as, like you said, as a grandfather you are, do you ever use some of the memories you have of your youth, whether it was in Vietnam or, you know, coming out of school in Santa Fe? Do you ever go back to those kind of memories and create art now that kind of reflects those moments in your life? Or do you just kind of go with what you're into right now?
Being an artist is something very special, I think. And some people say, oh, I was an artist. I forgot how to do that. I forgot how to do this. But for me, it's always there with me, my art. And I'm always thinking about my art. Every day I think about it, what I'm going to do next and all that. It's just in the heart that I have. It's not going to go away. And it's been like that ever since I was a child and went to Santa Fe, went to Catholic school, winning the awards and stuff like that. And but now it's even deeper right now. And I'm anxious to go back to work again. I've been retired for quite a while. All my grandkids are artists right now. One of them has a painting done, went to state fair last year, took first place. And my son, Brian, he's a great artist. He's a young man. He passed away about 20 years now. And I still have a lot of his paintings here at the house. And I got some paintings at another home in Albuquerque, a lot of his paintings. And that kind of affected me in an emotional way, in the mental. And I slowed down my work, thought about him a lot, his paintings. But now I'm retired now. My grandkids are in Albuquerque. My wife's here. I got my studio work getting worked on right now. Man, I'm going to town.
Yeah, good, good. I'm so glad that you're still creating and that you have that home base in Shiprock to work from. And then it's really good that you know you can go out from Shiprock and go show your art to other communities. Because sometimes I think as Native artists, we kind of get stuck in our little bubble of like our own community. And it's good that, you know, you still think about in the world where your art could go and, you know, what people would be able to see. What is one goal that you hope your art does to when it reaches people? What's your goal of your art, you know, as far as you wanting it to reach mental, spiritual, physical, people of all ethnicities?
There's one more artist that it mentions, Pete Jones of New York. He's a pottery sculptor. And we still have contact with him from New York. And I think about all those artists that I knew, worked with, worked in the studio with him right in front of me. I think about them all the time. And even today, I would tell my son, I said, I went to school with all these artists, my teachers. I wonder what will I be doing right now? Would I be the same level as T.C. Cannon, Alan Hauser, if I kept going 100%, you know? And when I came back from Vietnam, I went to the arts. I wanted to be an art history teacher. And we're all struggling, and Taos, T.C. Cannon, Pete Jones, all of us, we're all together. And I couldn't have my wife, my boy with me, and we're all struggling over there and selling here and there, you know. And I bought a lot of pieces from the artists there, and I still have them, like for $5, $10. Now they're worth a lot of money. I even got 5-6 paintings of R.C. Gorman.
Oh, wow.
I always wonder if I was thinking of my family too, my boy, and I changed my major to business administration and went to the bank for 30 years. I still do my work, but not heavy. Then I went to the school. I lost my son then, and then I kind of slowed down quite a bit, but now I want to go back, and I always wonder about that. I wonder if I kept with T.C. Cannon and had my home there, my studio. I don't know where it would be right now. I keep saying that to myself, you know, and but anyway. But I like to keep the arts going here, let people know who I knew, you know, the people I mentioned. And that's influence, not only me, influence who you know and who you talk about, what they've done, and how they influence you. And but I like to continue what I used to do and go back to my work, you know, but I will never lose it, though, you know.
Yeah, I think once you're an artist, you recognize, you know, and I always tell, you know, people that Navajos, we're all artists. We've all been gifted this talent to be creative, because I work in the schools and I see kids and they're just talented. I don't even have to teach them. They know how to do it already. But I'm really glad that you were able to find your footing after your time in the service. And, you know, even though you had your turmoils in your life, you know, it, to me, it seems like art really kept your head above the water. It really kept you grounded. And I think that's what art does. It helps heal people. It helps keep us together in whichever form that may be. So for you, Elmer, it seems like it has kept you that way. And now you're reflecting on your life as an artist, your life as a veteran. And it really seems like it's coming together, you know, the way it's supposed to have happened, you know. Do you have any upcoming shows that you might be doing, or are you still trying to get into that?
We got a home in Albuquerque, and my son just renting it right now. And said, "Dad, the house is ready. Come on over." So I went over there, and to my surprise, he took all my paintings. I have about, oh God, he took all the good paintings I have. But I'm not going to ask for it, you know. I do have paintings in my home. I have about at least 10 paintings that I have. I have about 20 in Albuquerque, you know. So, I just need to create some more again and keep trucking on, you know, and just have fun, you know.
Okay. So, you know, you don't have a website, do you?
No, we're creating one, getting one for my sister. All my family has paintings of mine, and they're taking pictures of them. We're going to get a little gallery on that soon. And take some pictures, and the ones in Albuquerque, and I've got some slides that I have from the Art Institute. I have about 20 slides. I can get that into my Facebook, whatever it is. But anyway, yes, I'll be working on that too, and it's Farmers' Show. 10 years ago, I entered the show there. I think I took second place. And they printed my painting on the T-shirt. So that was nice. I still had a T-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, they told me, well, your painting took second. We're going to put it on all T-shirts. Oh, really? Anyway, people knew about it. And when they gave my shirts, they're all sold out.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, they always want a good artwork, so it'll sell for them.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
I don't think they wear it because it looks too good to wear.
Yeah, they don't want to wash it.
Put it on the wall.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool. I wish I could see your artwork in person, but I think maybe people could maybe just Google your name, Elmer C. Yazzie, on the internet, and I'm sure your artwork's going to come up. And I guess for future reference for people that are listening on the radio, keep looking for Elmer's website. He said he's working on it with his family, and we'll be able to see his artwork. So, you know, like I said, Elmer, I'm so glad you were able to have that art experience during your life. And I'm really glad that you're still doing your art here in our community of the Four Corners in the Shiprock area. And I'm just really grateful that you were able to share your story with us today. I will catch up with you again at some point, I think, and maybe we'll have you back again as another guest on my regular programming. Right now, you're a guest on our special program here where we're talking about Native American veterans, who are also artists. So I think I will have you back, Elmer, as a guest on my regular program, and we can talk a little bit more in depth about your art and your process. But as far as that goes, Elmer, I think we've come to the end of our interview today. And is there any last things you might want to say before we sign off?
The non-Native Americans, they say, you Native Americans are good artists. How do you do that? And my answer is that the Navajo people out here, they see what they see. You people look what you look at. There's a difference. That's why they're great artists.
Yeah, that's great. It totally sums up everything we just talked about and all of our experience collectively. Well, thank you, Elmer, for your vision and your memory. And you're greatly appreciated here. And we hope that you keep going. And until next time on Native Art Voices and Veterans, we will see you and talk to you all again. Hogonat.
Hogonat. Thank you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.